football on Off the Ball.
So you can't not mix politics and sport. You have to do it, because you can't send an Israel team into the Viva Stadium and go, it'll be grand, Jack. No, it won't be.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Hurling Pod
on Off the Ball
with Apple Green, making every journey better.
Welcome along. It is the Hurling Pod on the back of the break week. We did have UL winning their fourth Fitzgibbon title in five seasons, very impressively, racking up a huge scoreline in an absolute score fest against Mary Eye on Friday night at Croke Park. Despite the fact there's flooding everywhere, Croke Park in absolutely perfect condition for that. We've got some tasty games for weekend four of the league on the way back as well. So we're going to talk about all that. Paul Murphy's here with us. How are you, Paul?
How's it going, lads? How are you?
James Skell is here. How are you, Skell?
Tremendous.
Many people felt that we tangent too much around the kids the last couple of weeks, talked too much away from hurling. The good news is it's all done now. The boys are settled. The children are settled now at this stage in home. So this is going to be, I would say, at least 5-6% more hurling content than you got last week. Even though you got an hour and a half of podcast last week. And someone else said, the members pod was only 46 minutes long. I'm like, your lads, it's 46 minutes of pure hurling.
Considering it's been, not to say uneventful so far, but it's the early hours of the league. Like, I mean, if this was, like, we've seen far bigger events over, particularly Championship, it's always going to be Championship. Like last year, after the Munster final, Jesus, we could have spent 3 hours talking about the penalties and all this sort of crack. Go back to the All-Ireland final the year previous and how that finished and so on. This is the league. 46 minutes isn't bad for an uneventful league so far, bar Cork and Tipperary fighting for 3 minutes.
Yeah, we're all just pacing ourselves a little bit. We're also going to have an announcement, I think, next week. We have talked a few times about going to Ulster to talk about hurling. I believe that's very much on the horizon in a couple of months' time. So we'll be able to announce that in full with a little bit more detail, I think next week or maybe the week after. But we are heading along Belfast Way very, very soon with the Hurling Pod. Football Pod's going to be going there as well. So looking forward to kind of linking up with them a little bit on the night as well. So all that to look forward to. James Skell, you as a Fitzgibbon aficionado was watching the game on Friday night. I was sitting at home in the rain just watching it too. But it was a good time, I think, to just stay inside. You 4-31, Mary Eye 3 goals and 21 points. Creates a remarkable double for the University of Limerick as well, who won the Sigerson also at Croke Park earlier in the week, only the fourth college ever to do the double. It's a star-studded UL team, Skell. You know, like, you can pick out how well Cathal O'Neill played during the game. You could look at the spread of scores. You could look at the fact that they've got just an unbelievable group of players. Darren McCarthy got 8 points, seven of them coming from frees. Don't think too many people complained about how long he took to take them. Jack Lighty scored 1-5 during the game. Jack O'Neill also got a goal. Mentioned Adam English was very impressive, 1-1 from midfield during the game. Aidan O'Connor popped over 3 points, a point for Adam Screeny, 7 points from Cathal O'Neill, who was named man of the match. It's an insane panel, isn't it? And a group of players that you all have just put together there.
It's ridiculous. And like, did they put them together? I was watching the game, so I didn't see the team sheets prior, nor have I followed UL's journey to the final, or even Mary Eye's that. So I tuned in probably, there was maybe 12 or 13 minutes gone in the game before I got the chance to tune in. And I'm looking in real time to see, there's Robert Dyle, there's Killy Dyle, sorry, there's Derek Fahey in goals, there's M. Screeny, Jesus, there's Darren McCarthy. And this just kept going on and on and on. And I was saying, this is an absolutely ridiculous team. So I'm back and I was like, that's Derek Fahey in goals, right? He's the Galway senior goalie. So he qualified out of GMIT 3 years ago. Do you know what I mean? Mm. He went working with me, with the company I work with, and then went back to college. This is his second Fitzgibbon in a row. I mean, this is all kinds of ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? That's probably his sixth Fitzgibbon championship. Do you know what I mean? To partake in, I think. But looking at the team, I could do nothing but laugh with. In terms of how effective UL were, how, you know, no matter what avenue Mary Eye managed to shut down, another one opened up because some star of the UL team was, you know, was playing wing forward. Like, Adam Screeny was wing forward. I didn't even know he was playing, you know, for a portion of the game because Darren McCarthy was playing so well. Then I go, oh, there's Jack O'Neill. You know, it accumulated into like this embarrassment of riches, you could say. And I looked forward more to who was coming on than to who was playing to see who else they had, you know. And I started thinking, at the end of the game, there was 59 scores, Will. You know, and I was back to our own time. Now, I'm going back a while, don't get me wrong. We won the Fitz. We had 30 scores. So the scoring rate doubled, you know. And it begs the question, was the art of defending gone? Now, I know people listen to this and say, you know, how do you defend against a team like that? But that game was terribly open, wasn't it? Like, a lot of the scores I saw were, you know, were a lot of the time uncontested. Now, there were some good moves by UL, absolutely, but it wasn't a contest per se. You know, it was, here, you score two, I'll score one. You score two, I'll score one. I didn't see any defending, and it got me thinking about the game as a whole, which we can get into in future, into it now, about defenders. Like Murphy, your day, man, you were a defender first, ball player second. You know what I mean by that? That's not trying to call.
Yeah.
You know, defender first, ball player second. I feel like defenders nowadays are ball players first, defender second. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you can look across the board and you can see defenders are being, people are being moved into defence, you know, to play the ball first, because today is all about possession. It's 9/10 of the law, as we all know. And then we'll defend after that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it put me down more rabbit holes than I want to go down, Les, honestly. That's how I got the situation going about Tipperary, which we'll cover shortly. But like, I'm just thinking, defending, is it dead? Is it gone? Where did it go?
I think part of it is that people often get very offended now when you mention systems, because people, it's like the old thing of, oh, we don't have tactics. Like, and I know Brian was probably the most criminal person for saying we don't have tactics. But now people nearly get offended when you're saying that teams have systems, because some people think that it detracts from them being a good hurling team, that they're hurling by a system, they're not natural hurlers. But I think defending now has become defending more so by a system with some teams. Now, I say this by saying I didn't watch UL play 1 minute hurling this year, so I'm not necessarily referring to UL here. I didn't watch any Fitzgibbon, so I haven't a clue. But lots of teams will have a way they want to defend. And I suppose what some managers maybe have to ask now, and this is only if you have, like, as you said, scaled embarrassment to riches, where you have a huge selection of players, where you can nearly look to say, like what you were touching upon there, are we going to defend by a system or defend by individual savage defenders? Now, some players go between both of them. But let's say the example I would give is that if you're defending by a system, do you want players within that system that can then burst forward? Because a lot of people will see Barry Nash and these lads going forward. Barry Nash is an outstanding defender as well as a player who can play within the system and drive forward and do all these things. But you do see a lot of teams that want to play a certain style. And I'd agree with you. It's an interesting thought. Are some teams maybe leaning more towards a system whereby, well, it's really our attacking threat is what we want to focus on. If teams book over a point or two down our end and defenders aren't necessarily doing your traditional defending, but they're part of the system that's moving the ball well, et cetera, like, it's a complicated thing to talk about, but I do agree with you. There is something to it whereby the out-and-out defending of defending your territory and defending your area, it's getting a little bit blurred now at the moment, because so many teams are operating the system. Like, you were meant to, are you going with your man? Are you doing zonal? Are we dropping a sweeper? Who's the man that's staying free? All this stuff. That 50-50 battle is probably gone a long time in many capacities, where a ball is rained down on top of somebody. And like, the only place we're probably seeing it at the moment in the league so far, and Skell, you touched on last week, is the Big 14, which looks like, if it prevails this year, it could be a mighty thing, where you have a big man in at the edge of the box, and when all else fails, landed in on top of him, which probably never disappeared from hurling. But that's probably one of the only areas where we're seeing the traditional 50-50, one person going up against another person, and you're fighting for the ball. Outside of that, it's a lot of systems, really.
I think, Murph, I mean this, now when I use the word blame, people, I hope you know what I mean. I think Limerick are to blame for this, right?
Okay.
Because Limerick became so strong in opposition puckouts that if you were a defence facing them, your defence had to be so good at playing the ball out through them, because you couldn't land the ball down top of them, they'd mop it up.
Yeah.
You know, and you try to work out through them, they turn you over. So they use it nearly as a weapon, which I've often referred to here, that they use your puck out as a way to turn you back over and get the ball back, right? So tactics, people talk about tactics. Tactics is very simple. You have a tactic to keep the ball and a tactic to get the ball back. It's very simple. Limerick are excellent at keeping the ball, and their tactic to get the ball back is shut down your puck out. That was rule number one with them, as far as I could see.
Yeah.
So then teams started having to adapt their defensive lineups. Every county did it, because they were getting crucified in turnovers. You know, happened to us in the 18 final. We had a tactic going out the back, and they just turned us over and turned us over. And so we were the first team to bear the brunt. And then you saw the transfer of Barry Nash, not transfer, but, you know, the relocation of Barry Nash and Kyle Hayes to the defence. You know, and maybe Declan Hannon even one step further back the way, as good athletic ball players who could defend, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And now it becomes a big baller tension kind of game. That's what I'm thinking about. The game as a whole right now, Limerick have had a huge effect on that. The game is like in positions 5 through 12. It's all about ball retention, working through that. And now every person on the team now nearly has to be a hurler first, defender second. I was trying to go through who are out-and-out defenders that I could see just from afar and say, right, you're definitely a defender. You know, I can see by you, not because your hurling skill is limited. No, that's not what I'm saying. But you're cut from a defender's cloth. So Adam Hogan is the first guy I could think of.
yeah,
in Clare. Then I can think Mikey Butler. Like, I'm not trying to be dismissive of Mikey Butler's job.
No, no, you're not. I know what you're saying, and all. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I started getting caught. Genuinely caught. And I was thinking, right, would I clash Sean O'Donoghue, who's not an out-and-out defender? I said, I probably would. You know, would Robert Doyle be an out-and-out defender? I probably would.
Yeah, I agree with Robert Doyle, yeah.
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 And now, I'm not in great stead now, lads, with the guys out-and-out defenders with me.
Casey, I would consider Mike Casey as well, in that kind of vein. Like, he's able to go up the field. All these players, like, we'll temper all this by saying all these players are capable of going up the field. There's no doubt about that. They wouldn't be playing intercounty hurling if they couldn't. But I agree what you're saying is that most of their quality leans towards being an out-and-out defender as opposed to heavily lean towards getting up the field or being a hurler. Yeah. Yes. And that refers to all these players. Like,
yes. Like Sean Finn, I would class an out-and-out defender.
Yeah.
But can play the ball really well. I think he's probably, which would easily happen, like Barry Nash seems to be the person who gets the free license to go up the pitch, because that's one of his major attributes. Everyone would agree that. I think if Sean Finn took off up the pitch, you know, he mightn't be met with the same level of positivity. But you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
If it's a landmarking job, Sean Finn will do it. Barry Nash probably needs to be the person that's allowed to go forward and defend in the same breath. So, like, when I made the statement, is the art of defending gone? I didn't mean it as drastic as that, but I don't see the day of out-and-out defenders. And we grew up, you know, which we all did, we grew up in an age where defending was religion.
Mm-hmm. You know,
players were certainly capable of playing the ball, but, like, geez, if a ball went in on top of, you know, Noel Hickey, God bless you. God bless you to come and get it out, you know?
Yeah.
The same way Ollie Canning. Ollie Canning was a super at playing the ball, but defending was top class. So the game is heading towards a ball retention job. It's there. It's a ball retention kind of game. And the only people, as I see, with a 50-50 at Murphy, as we've touched on, is maybe one or two people in the full back line for Farland. It's kind of like moving pieces everywhere.
No, you're dead right. And like, it's an interesting thought for any managers or coaches, because like, one of the things I find interesting, and I suppose it's to step away a small bit from the defender side of things, like, I've been involved with a few teams before, and even just, you know, you step in, you coach one or two teams for one or two sessions or something. But I've often heard, lads, when you're selecting a team, and particularly with younger players, like, let's say players who might be 18, 19, and I've had lads who are coaching say, oh no, that fella, he's a half forward. And I'm kind of going like, what do you mean he's a half forward? Like, is it not? He's incapable of playing midfield, or he's incapable of playing corner forward. But sometimes people also typecast, which is the other side of it, that they only typecast a player as that lad has played left half forward since he's 14. He's now 18. He's a half forward, and you're going, why would you put a fella into such a narrow space to say that's all he is? And like, I actually think there's sometimes at the other side of things for coaches and managers, they often view a player, because traditionally a player plays in that situation or plays in a certain position for a few years, that's all they are. Oh, they're half forward. They can't play anywhere else. Whereas the beauty of some of the players, which we've seen, Declan Hannan being the example, when we were growing up, Declan Hannan was centre forward and he was wing forward. He was nothing else. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, like the other day, we were talking about the question of, can Declan Hannan be replaced at centre back? Like, there's no talk of the forward anymore. Barry Nash, you mentioned there. I know we're talking Limerick players here. Barry Nash, forward. Like, you know, there's so many players there that, if you're to get the conversation going from the other side of things, is that sometimes people actually just typecast players in one little, that's it, that's what you are, you're a half forward, you're a corner forward, and you're nothing else. When sometimes you see players getting a savage lease of life, being released into another position, and suddenly their attributes now is far more suited for a midfielder or for a half back. And again, the other thing you have to consider is the game. The game has completely changed as well, in that Kyle Hayes and these boys were seeing being redeployed at wing back far more suits their attributes of direct running than traditionally, when you go back years ago, a half hour position would have suited them a lot better, because it was more open, it was 50-50, and it was a lot more openly contested play. So there's definitely a wider conversation around all the positions on the field in that regard.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think Croke Park's a slight factor in all this as well, Skell, because a few years ago, like, Jamie Wall and Podge Collins can clearly set up their Mary Eye teams to be very difficult to break down. I remember they shackled a couple of years ago a very strong UL team as well. Mm-hmm. They did it in Kerry in a slightly tighter pitch, and maybe it suited on that day to be able to do that. They were able to kind of compress the space a little bit more. What I noticed at Croke Park at the weekend, and when you do have that embarrassment of riches, and in fairness, Shane O'Brien did a brilliant job for Mary Eye on the other side. He scored 1-12 during the game too. There was plenty of freedom for Mary Eye to take their scores as well. I think in Croker, that kind of diagonal ball, or the ball out to a wing forward, or the overlapping player and so on, that space just seemed to be there. And also, that pitch on Friday night was in better condition than any other pitch around the country, because of just the nature of Croke Park as well. It was perfectly set up to be a score fest. So
it was, like, but I've often said the pitches play tight, you know, so it's harder to play in a tight pitch than it is in a big expensive pitch. But like the manner in which the ball was travelling up to the UL forwards was so easy. Like there was no contest, there was no physicality. You know, okay, we can talk about it. At the end of the day, it's college hurling, right? And I know it's littered with flipping stars, but I just thought as a contest, it was none.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was none, to be honest. You know, other than Shane O'Brien, what else was coming? So.
Tis a fair point. I know. This is one that the listeners can play along with. So I was having a look. The Premier View had this up during the week, which was the 2018 panel that was UL versus the current Fitz panel, right? Now, so the current panel, Derek Fahey, Kermit Smith, Daryl Langan, Aaron Mongan, Killian Doyle, Mark Fitzgerald, Colin Coughlin, Adam English, Jack O'Neill, Aidan O'Connor, Cathal O'Neill, Adam Screeny, Darren McCarthy, Oisin O'Donoghue, Jack Lai, Joe Fitzgerald, Conor Martin, Dermot Stritch, and Fintan Fitzgerald, and Ian Shannon from Leash as well. That's just stacked. So much inter-county experience, All-Ireland winners all over the place in that team as well. 2018 team, though, and leave it to the listeners to decide who's more stacked or not. And Skell made a fair point before we come on. 2018, we judge on the fact that a lot of these lads have 5 or 6 years more senior hurling on the back of it, so we judge them on that. But still, Dave McCarthy, you've got Conor Cleary, Sean Finn, Barry Heffernan, Garrod Hegarty, David Fitzgerald, Tony Kelly, Ronan Lynch, Ian Galvin, Tom Morrissey, John McGrath, Jason Ford, Barry Murphy, Pat Ryan, Michael Casey, David Gleeson, Brian Troy, Jordan Henley, Barry Nash, and Kyle Hayes.
So am I right in saying there, at the time the Fitzgibbon was played in 2018, there would have been 2 All-Ireland winners in that team, would there be? Tony Kelly and Galvin. Or no, Ian Galvin sure was the younger brother.
Yeah.
One All-Ireland winner. Is that
Tony,
fair,
Tony Kelly, yeah.
Was John McGrath, was he on the team? He was.
Probably, John, right? John McGrath would have been involved in 6, he would have been.
So we have 2 All-Ireland winners, have we? Barry Heffernan wasn't, or was he? He was. He was 19. Barry Heffernan, wasn't he?
I couldn't tell if he was in 16 or not. So.
Okay, for the purpose of the debate, it's 2 if not 3 All-Ireland winners,
and earlier in the year.
Yeah. Now go to today's team, the UL team.
Well, Ford would have had an All-Ireland as well, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would have. Yeah, he would have.
Okay, so are we giving them 4?
Yeah, at least 4.
4 by 1. So it was 4 medals basically, in essence, right? And as you rightly said, Murphy, Hurler of the Year, and Hurler of the Year, 2 of them. In today's team, Will, how many have we got?
Well, Darren McCarthy, Oisin O'Donoghue anyway. Then Colin O'Neill, Adam English.
Colin O'Neill has got 2, not 3. He's 2, isn't he?
If not 3.
I'd say he's 3.
Colin Coughlin would have 1.
Adam English would have 2 or 3 as well. My God.
Would Aidan O'Connor have 1?
He would not, I'd say.
Donoghue's in the panel. 3 years ago.
I don't think so.
No. By all means, correct us in the comments on both the YouTube and on the Spotify.
Oh, please do. Yeah.
But it's just, it's the potential that group of players right now that they have, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the best way to judge this is actually in, like, as you rightly said,
5, 6 years' time.
Yeah. Well, 8 years has been has passed since that 2018 team. So, like, that's really what you judge it on. Because I think you even mentioned at the start there, Kyle Hayes wasn't starting on that UL team, was he not? Like, so
he was on the bench for the final anyway.
Okay, so could be injured or could be, but like basically enough, like obviously a good few of them players flourished once they got to senior level as well, like really established themselves.
So there you go. Pick 2018, pick 2026, let us know. And let us know if the art of defending is dead, as Skell has been bemoaning as well.
You know what I mean?
For a weekend that there was no hurling, no intercounty hurling on, that's a big statement out. It's a Ben O'Connor type statement now.
I decided I'd go and have a quick look at the Spotify and have a look at a few of the comments before we start digging into the games for this weekend. Gary Farrell, I regret listening to this at work when 7 minutes in, Skell is talking about keep ploughing and the different positions and room temperatures needed to sire a boy. It's a fair point. I did wonder about that on the re-listen as well.
My mother-in-law told me to tone it down a bit. So.
I bet. It hasn't worked so far. Enda, the old AI is under fierce pressure with the Cappy dialect. Hilarious auto subtitles. So obviously we have no control over that, but I noticed there's AI subtitles now on both YouTube and Spotify, and Skell, your accent is a test for them.
Am I still talking very fast?
I'd say it's more how you say things, Hale. No offense. We understand you. It's just that AI is out in California somewhere and it's trying to figure you out.
It's just what
is this? AI is out in Silicon Valley out near San Francisco there. It's under pressure.
Then we had another couple. Oh, Tommy Walsh. Not that Tommy Walsh, as he's well known. Wexford man. I echo Scales' concerns. I think Wexford's failure to blood in new talent has now caught up with them. Since Chin, Fanning, Foley, etc. burst onto the scene 2013-2014 territory, we haven't added one or two more players a year since. We relied on that crop of very successful under-21s for the best part of a decade. We now need a massive overhaul at one time. I fear there's a chance we'll drop back to the Joe McDonagh. Between 1985 and 2019, we won one Leinster minor at underage. We're historically quite poor. Serious changes are needed. So, Wexford's Tommy Walsh saying it's a strong possibility they can fall back.
But don't the years move so fast, lads?
They do, don't they?
Like Wexford, I'm looking here, Wexford 30 years and counting, Cork 20 years, Kilkenny 10 years. You know, if you said Kilkenny or Cork wouldn't win in Ireland in the 10 years, would you be thinking mad? But time moves so quick that the Wexford Leinster final win, it seems like to them probably 2 or 3 years ago, but we're heading on 7.
Yeah.
But what I'm thinking back here now, and somehow forgot about it in the conversation last week. Was it 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Kilkenny were going to Wexford Park? And was that potentially looking at putting Wexford into the Joe McDonagh at that time? Remember the big match that went on? What was the significance of that match? And I'm only thinking off the top of my head here now. Wexford bet Kilkenny that night.
An absolute goal fest. Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, it was absolute goal fest. And that saved them from leaving the Leinster Championship.
I remember this because somebody wrote into us and said there was Kilkenny fans saying best luck in Joe McDonagh during the game.
Do you know when we were talking about conversation that like we just fear about Wexford? We're not putting a nail in Wexford coffin here, but 3 years ago, it nearly happened. I think it was Davy's tenure. Was it the last year of Davy? See, this is the thing. I'm only thinking off the top of my head now. It's just since I listened to that comment, I'm thinking that it wasn't so long ago that this actually nearly happened. So it's not unrealistic to say it now at the moment. Again, nobody's putting a nail in their coffin here. But, the hallmarks...
Was that the Westmead beat them?
I think so. In Westmead. Was it in Westmead? Westmead beat them twice. Once in Wexford Park.
One was a draw. It's effectively remembered as a win, though.
Correct. That was the one.
Late Derek McNicholas goal, and
yes,
everyone seems to remember it as if Westmead had won. But
fair enough. Okay.
Yeah. Look, I still stand over my belief from last week, though, that I would think that Wexford. Yeah. So yeah, they needed the win in 2023, Murph. Well remembered.
Yeah.
To stay up. Yeah. I still think that they get a result against Kildare or Offaly, though. Because it's an either-or that they're going to need to stay up.
Kildare or Offaly. Where is the Kildare match on, out of curiosity?
I need to double-check.
No, the thing is about it.
Kildare of Antrim's fixtures from last year. Reversed.
That doesn't help me at all.
No, but this is how I remember it.
You've actually made it more complicated on me now. Now I have to remember when.
No, go on. You keep talking, no, I'll remember.
My point being is that... a point I made last week is that Offaly have a lot of injuries at the moment, and Offaly are coming from a different place than Kildare. Kildare took a huge amount from beating Antrim last weekend, in terms of it was a big marker for them. And I know there's other points that people talk about, and what probably dominated the conversation after that was Davy's tenure in Antrim. Like a lot of people, there was a lot of articles I saw this week or last week about that, whereas probably the real reflection is, sorry?
Liam Watson,
yeah. But what the point I was saying for Kildare's point of view is that Kildare got a nice bit of recognition last week for the job that they did, but probably got drowned out a small bit in that conversation. Whereas Kildare now are building towards, they're really focused on getting these big wins. And like we've seen with Wexford previously, again, Westmead up in Cusick Park a couple of years ago, correct in saying they were beaten in that one and they drew in Wexford Park against Westmead. Is that what we're saying?
No, they lost. The other way around. They lost in Wexford Park.
So when you see that sometimes like Wexford always play outstanding against Kilkenny, and when they come to Nolan Park or play outstanding, but then sometimes we see them like against Dublin last year. Year before they coughed up a 6-point lead down in Wexford Park, and it really kind of catapulted, it kind of started Dublin's kind of momentum last year. I think in the year previous, but basically we've seen a few results at Wexford where the games get cagey and then suddenly you don't know what potentially might happen. Where we've seen with Kildare, like Kildare and the Joe McDonagh final last year, were top class. Like, once they got in the lead, they kicked on. Against Antrim last weekend, once they got in the lead, they kicked on. So I would actually look at the Kildare match being far more dangerous in terms of get drawn into a dogfight. Kildare have great hurlers as well. Than Offaly are coming at it from a different point of view, in that they have so many injuries at the moment. They're viewing it in a different way, and they're coming at it from a different angle. So I just think at the moment, with Kildare riding that bit of a crest of a wave, while they have the momentum behind them, and we spoke about momentum last week, how important it is to keep it once you have it. That, I think that could be a really tricky match. And I stand to be corrected that they could go and get, you know, get beaten. But we looked at Wexford playing down, drawn into a dogfight, you know, barely got out of town. The Antrim match, the last book of the game, Mark Fanning, whereas Kildare hurled really well against Antrim and had a bet by 10 points. So I think there's lots of markers there to say that the Kildare match could be far more dangerous than the Offaly match for Wexford.
They've been shaky, right? So again, I had a quick look at the master fixture list there. So they go to both Kildare and Offaly in the Leinster Championship. So not the ideal set of fixtures for Wexford, where you've got kind of the stronger teams at home, and then you go on the two games that they definitely have to win. Lose one of them, and then the nerves really start to kick in.
Yeah,
and then tough. the other fixture becomes really, really tough at that point. And ultimately for Kildare, the most important thing is they've got Wexford at home in the middle of the Championship, and they've Offaly at home in the last game. So if Kildare are going to stay up and get another year in Leinster, the two most important fixtures for them are at home. So we're looking to take one of the teams out in Connaught's Park. I think, let's not do a Leinster senior hurling preview right now, but I think most people will probably accept it's going to be a case of Kildare, Galway, Dublin, who are going to be competing for those top three, and then the other three are trying to stay up. That is almost certainly what's going to happen. I'd be shocked if any or three pushed above Dublin, Galway, Kilkenny.
Good save there, Will. You did say Kildare.
You say Kildare, Galway.
Sorry, I did wonder for a moment. This is what happens when we record in the morning as opposed to the night. No Weetabix been had just yet. Sorry, let me rephrase that. I think the top three will almost definitively be Kilkenny, Galway, Dublin, and the other three are fighting to stay up. It's going to be two mini leagues, I think. Oh, don't worry about the order. The order we can talk about.
you always draw it into that, don't you? Like, really? Yeah. It's not even a fella has to nail his colours to the mast. He has to get up on the mast with them and go, all right, this is the order. And anything less than this, you can stone me dead.
I'm guilty. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's let the league finish first. And then we can calm down, have our conversation, go have a nice little live pod in Belfast. Yeah. Come back on the far side and get ready for the provincial championships. And then you can worry about what three are coming out of Munster and who's going to be the top two in Leinster, etc., etc. The Hurling Pod is brought to you by Applegreen, helping you relax, recharge and enjoy the journey ahead. We'll look forward to the games for this weekend in a second, because we've got some very, very interesting ones, including Saturday night's live game, 5:30. You've got Tipperary against Limerick at Semple Stadium. On Sunday in Division 1A, you've got a derby between Kilkenny and Waterford. You've also got Galway making the trip to Offaly. That game is in Burr as things stand this Sunday. I wonder how the pitch is going to hold up during the week. And in Division 1B, you've got Dublin versus Wexford, which is a pretty important game in the promotion chase. Dublin in the break, week before the break. Kildare looking to keep the momentum going when they take on Clare. And then the other game in Division 1B is on Sunday, which is Antrim versus Carlow. Before we look at all them, you have been having a think, James Skell, about the Kilkenny captain, TJ Reid, who we heard from at a sponsor event just a couple of weeks ago. You are wondering what type of role TJ is going to play for Kilkenny this year.
Now, the way you started it off now makes me sound like I'm axing TJ. So to get to the bottom of this
don't
now.
Don't be backing out of it now, Skell.
No. I think I quite literally said to you, you have been considering what role he's going to play. I did not say TJ out, TJ central man. I've given you the floor in this discussion.
And the consideration was actually stemmed off of Corkman, right? It was stemmed off Ben O'Connor. So I think we've publicised, or he's publicised himself really well over the last couple of weeks, and how he carries himself in interviews. He has quite a bullish attitude, if you like. You know, very straight to the point. He doesn't mince his words. He goes at people right in front of him. You know, there's no chatterboxing. It's direct. Okay, and I was thinking, is he trying to change the psyche of the Cork team as a whole? You know, because whether we like it or not, or whether they like it or not, the manner in which they lost the final last year is extremely tough to take. And it requires, you know, rectification. Simple as that. So that got me thinking, is Ben O'Connor, is that his true self? Is that the way he is, you know, 9 to 5 during the week? You know, and then I got thinking further, who's the only manager I can think of that is like that? And I said, well, the only man that I can think of that carries himself in a bullish manner and backs it up is Liam Cahill, Tipperary manager. And then, Will, I got thinking about the Tipperary team contrasting years 2025 to 2024. So then I dived into the Tipperary team. Talk about a rabbit hole, man. I went right down into this, okay?
I'm dying to know how this gets back around to DJ at this stage.
It does. Help me out here, okay? So, of course, I went looking at the Ireland final team last year. And then I went looking at I picked a random game. I picked Tipperary versus Limerick in the 2024 Munster Championship. I put the two teams side each other. And I wanted to see how much surgery Liam Cahill carried out in a bullish manner, you know, because the amount of surgery he carried out was huge. So, in terms of Tipperary, from that game, Tip versus Limerick, and the final in Tip versus Cork, players who played and held their same position, one, right? Willie Connors. New players, seven. Seven new players. And then positional changes, seven. So only one player of the whole 15 kept his same spot. Seven new players out, seven players in, and then seven position changes for lads ahead there. So that was absolute surgery to his team. And then it got me thinking further. If Derek Ling in his position right now, he's looking at Tipperary, not for the moment, obviously, does he have to carry out, I'm putting inverted commas, major surgery to his kidney team? Then I got to TJ. Well, I said, right, if you're playing TJ, where do you play him, right, to make sure he, you know, he remains in the team for 70 minutes, and I came full forward. That's it. That's what I was saying in my mind. I'm saying, I'm not trying to drop him or get rid of him. I'm saying for him to be effective for Kilkenny, I can't see him in the half-forward line. I can't see him any way further back. I don't think he'd be warranted in a corner-forward position. The only place I can see him is full forward, and that's, if any kind of surgery is to happen, you know, it'll happen with others, but I can't see him be facilitated anywhere else than 14. And if he is, I ask the question, does that do more harm than good? Do you know what I mean? Because John McGrath was the guy I'm looking at Tipperary. He ended up being hurled of the year. He stuck in full forward. He's not the fastest person. You know, he's not the most aggressive, let's say. And he's just a clinical finisher. And so he was on the end of a lot of plays last year, which didn't warrant him getting the hurled of the year conversation and ultimately winning it, right? So then I'm saying about TJ, I'm trying to assess Tipperary's, you know, surgery versus what would Derek Ling have to do for Kilkenny to not facilitate TJ, but to make sure he's effective, really effective, and the team improves. And that was the question I was raising. I wasn't aiming towards you, Morph. I was saying, you know, seven new players coming to the Tipperary team. Three of them I would class as rookies in Doyle, Samafar, and McCarthy. And then I'm wondering, are those three type players in Kilkenny? That's why I was so impressed with their performance last week. This week they're playing Limerick again. Will the same players play if they're effective with against Limerick? Are they going to keep? That's Tipperary. You're playing Watford. Watford are going away. If the same Kilkenny players get a home game, will they be as effective against Watford? Will they keep their spots for Championship? There's an awful lot to unload there, okay? Now you get an idea of how my mind started and where it went. And now it's ultimately going to Kilkenny kids. Are they there to leave TJ in 14 and they carry the load in positions 10, 11, 12 and so on? I think you're going to have Mullen, you're going to have Cody, Don Donnelly, Mossy Keown. But is there one or two guys that we don't know of that are going to come into the Kilkenny team, up the levels and you move it on? Are you with me?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You asked about seven questions there.
Yeah, that was the thing.
Hold on. Let's throw Murph one of the questions and then we can wrap it back around to TJ's role. So are there young players to inject into the team right now, Murph, if Derek Ling was to decide to do major surgery, as Skell just said?
Yeah. Well, see, right, I'm not going to rephrase it differently. When Skell said the point about, would you know, taking a leaf out of Liam Cahill's book, does Derek Ling have to do that? The one thing I would say with Derek Ling, so Derek Ling took over the senior job after winning the under-20 All-Ireland, and he brought on a huge amount of those under-20s. And the one thing that I would say that Derek Ling, you can't be critical of Derek Ling for, is playing a load of those younger players that people maybe don't even know many of their names. Like, so a lot of people were even looking at the Welsh Cup this year and league matches and whatever, and they were looking at some players going, geez, I'm not even sure about those players. Derek's given huge opportunities to lads. The thing I would actually say is lads taking their opportunities. Like, this isn't, there's no point in coming out and trying to protect lads and say that, you know, like you would at minor maybe or Fitzgibbon, to say, well, look, they're young, et cetera, et cetera. When you're hurling at senior level, eventually comes a stage where the safety net's completely gone automatically anyway. But you have to start taking your chances at some stage. I think Derek has given a huge amount of chances to younger players. And the example I would give, and to probably tie it in with the point of TJ, is last year when we played Tipperary in the park in the league, it was one of the worst performances we had last year. I'm not being completely, you know, I suppose down and out about it, but tactically and everything, we're a little bit all over the place. And people came away from Nolan Park going, Tipperary looked really good. And Kilkenny looked a little bit at sixes and sevens, kind of didn't really know what we were about and we're all over the place. But one of the main points from a tactical point of view, or from basic hurling, TJ was in the full forward line, if I'm correct in saying that, because I'm thinking with two matches, the Tipperary match 1 week and the Limerick match the following week, and he was flanked by younger players. The one player that kept making a stick was TJ. And when I was looking at it, I was going, right, if you want to have all these tactics, one of the main basic things you have to be doing is winning your own ball and making the ball stick that's coming in. If you're not doing that, all the tactics mean nothing around you. So when TJ didn't play at the start of the league last year, his presence was very noticeable when he came back with that. Not only was he a threat, but he was doing something that some of the younger players weren't doing. And that was quite simply, ball was coming into you, making it stick in the hand, and at the very least, popping it off to another player, continuing the attack. So for me, but we would just get it. Maybe number 14 is the most beneficial place for him. But the other argument I make there is that Mossy Keown has been absolutely outstanding, like in terms of when they've cycled him through that position. Mm-hmm. Sometimes Mossy, they bring him further out the field. Last year was by far his best year and he was brilliant. But his physicality in and around the goal, we've seen, has been crucial in terms of getting goals and sometimes even dirty goals for Kilkenny, like not these glamorous, you're hanging it up in top corner, just pure physicality, being able to complete with your Doughty Burke, which are Mike Casey and these lads. So TJ still has that capacity as well, in that one of the most dangerous things TJ has is that his ability to catch a ball, sometimes without even jumping, just standing there, waiting, a lad goes to compete, tries to spoil TJ, and TJ catches it. That asset alone, I think, is best utilised at full forward. Now, I think, Scale, you were kind of maybe touching towards the fact that, I know, and correct me if I'm wrong in saying this, that maybe TJ's presence there was in itself maybe stopping another player coming through. But is that inaccurate to say, or is that maybe fair to say?
What I'm trying to get towards is that when I look at the surgery Tipperary already carried out, it resulted in Ireland final victory.
Yeah.
I'm saying if Kilkenny go out with the same team, you know, in the not necessarily the same position, but the same team, will they win the Ireland? I could say confidently here, it's a no. It won't. It comes down to this, right? You've got players, you've got tactics, as we know, you've got conditioning, this and that. Ultimately, it comes down to a level of player. You know, and individuals will dictate results by their performance, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you get some young players in who can play at the top level, you know, McCarthy, Sam Farrell, these guys, they influence the result as well.
Yeah.
They get over the line, right? And 2 or 3 points. I know Tipperary lost, beat you by 2 or 3 points last year. I'm going to say two points.
Yeah. Right? It depends which scoreboard.
Depends on the scoreboard, yeah.
Excuse me. And people would say that's a very, very small margin. And it is numerically, right? But ultimately, it's about winning. So it does not matter. I try to tell this to people in sport. If it's 1 point or 10, it doesn't matter. It's about winning. Yeah. We've all had the nearly this, that, you know, it's bullshit. So my question really is, if TJ is at 14, right, if he's at number 10, are Kilkenny at their strongest? I'm arguing no, they're not. If he's at 14, that's his strongest position for 14. I think there must be some other younger player over the last 3 or 4 years who can occupy a number 10 position or a 12, a bit like a Sam Farrell, a Darren McCarthy. I'm looking for that injection to the forward line that can facilitate the four guys, TJ, Mossy, Adrian, and on Cody, right? If Mullins at midfield, John Donnelly's included. You with me?
Yeah.
I'm saying, can you need one or two? I'm not saying replace TJ. I'm asking, are they there? You know, do they go into midfield and wing forward to leave TJ at 14? You know, it's a long-winded question.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying, but like one of the points I would say is that when you were saying that Liam Cahill did surgical to me says that there was an overhaul. Would I be right in saying that? Like some people may surgical mean that you did very accurately replacing players, but when you were saying that he did you're pointing towards a big overhaul of players and that he brought in younger players. Is that what you're kind of pointing towards?
Of the 7 players he brought in, I would argue that obviously 3 of them are rookies. Or sorry, I say rookies and 2 American now at the moment, lads. 3 of them are rookies, right? But 4 of them, of the 4, one of them was established. So John McGrath wasn't playing in 24. Couldn't really get on the team. He was the guy that came back and was established. Then what you have is 3 players who were on the cusp, if you want to call it. They were there for a while. Like Andrew Armour's one of them. Do you know what I mean? He's one of them. And then there were 7 guys just gone. Just gone. We haven't seen. I can see names here. I haven't seen them. But I just don't know where they're gone. You know what I mean?
The thing is, the argument I'd make against that is that, like, 7 players, for example, right? That's the point that you're making with Liam Cahill. Like if John Donnelly hits the back of the net last year and Robert Doyle doesn't block the ball, we're not talking about this conversation. And I would say that if you're that close where one puck of a ball could have changed that, and even the other side you could make that, Oisín Donoghue, whose goal was outstanding. If Kilkenny just flung that ball down the field, like Kilkenny had the winnings of a match, had the winning, let's say, the bones of a winning team on the field. So that to me wouldn't say that you need to bring in 7 players. I would be saying there that you're close enough, you're just maybe, if you inject 1 player, 2 players, depends. But that's only if those players are performing. I think if you force the issue there, say, we need to bring in young players. Like, Derek is blooding, lads. And if blooding is your aim, he can't be criticised for that. Mm-hmm. After that, then it's down to the players to actually grab the jersey. If I was looking at a half forward line or full forward line there at the moment for Kilkenny, based off the availability of players, I would be looking at, no younger player has come through that is better than Owen Cody, John Donnelly, Adrian Mullen, Mossy Keown, and TJ at the moment to throw them in. Like, Billy Ryan is now not there anymore. So there's an opportunity for a younger player. Sorry,
so go on. I have to put across here, I've come to the fulcrum of the question, right? The 15 players that played against Super A last year, do you have to play them again? So that's a better question to ask. Or is there anyone that can come in and get themselves into the 15? Because right about the margin was so fine, admittedly, it was so fine. If he went toe to toe with Super A again tomorrow in fucking June or July, with the same 15, would that be the peak, the best you can offer, or is there anyone else that you can get in to get over the line?
There is, but they probably just haven't proven themselves at the standard yet. Like, I've seen lads tipping around, like Timmy Clifford and these boys who are playing club hurling in Kilkenny. Like, they've obviously been on the panel, and there's plenty of lads there outstanding at club level, and they're outstanding players and even underage with Kilkenny, but maybe just haven't shown up at this level. Like, if you're looking, Hugh Lawler's gone. I know it's a very Kilkenny dominated conversation we're having, but Hugh Lawler's gone. Mikey Carey so far is pointing towards that potentially he can do his own job there now, and that's that replaced. If Billy Ryan has gone down the far end, who are you bringing in? Well, like, we've seen Dara Corcoran, for example. Dara had an outstanding match against Limerick at the weekend. You now have another person potentially for a half back line. Does that give you the asset then that you push Paddy Deegan into midfield and maybe Jordan Malloy goes up then and does a job? Jordan Malloy has hardly put a foot wrong since he's been playing. So I'm looking at, yes, there is players to come in, but also is there a case that you rejig players and put them around? Yeah. So it's, for me, like, I'm still saying that the main one for me this year was that, will Hugh Lawler be an unhinged enough Kilkenny? At the moment, Mikey Carey seems to be doing a good job, so I'm happy enough. Do you know, if that turned out to be a complete kind of Jesus nut that pulled apart the whole thing for Kilkenny, I'd be like, right, we're under pressure now. But I haven't seen that yet.
So yeah, because what I can't get away from is the fact that Kilkenny have won 6 Leinsters in a row. Is that right? Isn't it 6, Murph?
Yeah, I think so,
They've won 6 Leinsters in a row. So they've qualified for the semi-final every year for the past 6 years. Munster is different because it's a war in itself.
Yeah.
So getting out of Munster is, it's a job in itself, as you say. Yeah. So Kilkenny have been at semi-final stage, at least for the last 6 years. And if I went back and, say, picked year number 2 or 3, would the same 15 be shown then as they were last year? I'd be very closer, wouldn't I?
No, it wouldn't be far off it, yeah. Yeah, but probably to compare it to Tipperary, I would say, is that, like, Kilkenny had a kind of a turnover of players around that time where your Hugh Lawler and Michael Butler and these guys came in. And at the same time, if you remember, like, when Liam Cahill was in, something that Tipperary were not to say criticised about was that maybe they didn't blood as many younger players over the few preceding years, that those on the 21 teams.
They were 100% criticised for that.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
The 2019 kind of generation ended up going for too long. That was a big argument,
It was a big argument. And the thing was Liam Cahill bore the brunt of that. And he had to kind of weather a storm for maybe a year or two before he got in these players. So, like, he actually had a period. And this is the thing about winning All-Irelands. People forget kind of what happened previously to it. If you look at Brian Lowen as well, Brian Lowen was under pressure till he won the All-Ireland, or till he had that really good year where, like, yes, there was good performances, but people were asking about his credentials in some of the matches, and again, losing up in Antrim. But when Liam Cahill won the All-Ireland, a lot of people can now maybe forget about that criticism. But he also had to go through that period of blooding those players, and people asking the very same questions you're asking now, Scahill, of are those players there or aren't they there? Like, Derek Ling is in a little bit of that situation because there hasn't been an All-Ireland delivered. People are still asking those questions. But for me, when I look at it, and it's not being, overly positive instead of being overly critical, I look and say, well, if we were beaten by Tipperary by 20 points in the semi-final last year, you go, surgical overhaul, we need to get rid of a lot of things. When there was the width of a hurl getting to an All-Ireland final, whatever but winning it, when there was width of a hurl getting to it, I'm going, well, whatever's there, there's not too bad. Like, it's not too far away. So that's, I suppose, tied into a Tipperary point of view, that's my perspective on it.
Okay. So to bring this back around to you, Scal, do you think the TJ Reid should still be starting for Kilkenny this year, firstly?
Starting?
Yeah.
At full forward, yes, guaranteed.
Yeah. If he's not at full forward, do you think he should be starting?
I just don't think it sounds terrible. Like, I just think his best attributes, like high ball, he's a machine in the high ball. He's deadly, let's say, Portugal on the square. He's just a major concern for opposition defences if he's at the square. I just think his lethality in the half-forward line is diminished if he's out there.
Okay.
He can still catch the ball, don't get me wrong, but he's lethal inside. He can cause, like, last year he scored 5-5 from play, if memory serves me correctly, from, like, 5 appearances. That was him predominantly more in the position at 14 around the house. Predominantly.
Yeah.
So I just think that's where he's most lethal. If he's in there, absolutely, that's where you get the best out of him. And that's why I'm asking, is there players that can facilitate him to remain at 14? I suppose my point being is, if he has to come out at 14, is that a problem for Kilkenny?
Okay.
That's what I'm getting towards.
That's a fair point.
In a very long-winded manner.
No, but I think there has to be a way that Derek Link could have himself and Mossy close to goal and allow the other players to buzz around him.
Or, like, if I was in opposition, I wouldn't like to be behind those two.
Hmm.
Because, like, those two are just goal machines. That's what they are. Some forwards are playing the full forward line, Will, and we've come across them. You know they don't want to go for goal. You know, they're just happy to get the points or whatnot. But those two boys, it's the green flag first. After that,
yeah. Yeah. Look, I just hope Adrian Mullen comes back from this latest injury and he's okay and gets back fit and form, and particularly if they can get Cody and Mullen onto the pitch fit together, because it just seems when one comes back, the other one gets injured. It'd be great if they were all fit for a prolonged period of time, Murph. That has been a tricky thing in itself, because, you know, when you talk about overhauls and new players, remember, there's two former young hurlers of the year and both have just been very unlucky with the periods that they've been out.
Yeah, completely. Like, I mean, when you look at Adrian Mullen, like, niggling injuries at him between a calf, I think maybe a foot, I think hamstring.
The latest one was a late slap, which he should never get injured from.
This is the thing, like, you know, so, like, the latest one is the most unfortunate one where, look, you know, it obviously happened in the club championship, but, like, you know, what does a fella have to do? Like, he's hurling away, the match is basically over, and then suddenly he gets a wrap in the hand and breaks a bone in his hand. Like, That to me then is like more than his fair share of bad luck that he gets like to that, because like Adrian, like we've seen Adrian when he goes well, like he's just such a handful and covers, like he's been man the match so many times for Kenny, he's outstanding. Yeah. So for Kenny people, we're looking at him going like yeah, for Kenny to win in All Ireland, there's a few key players, and like other counties will look at it and say these are my players. Adrian Mullen's one of those players for Kenny that for Kenny to win in All Ireland, you feel he has to be on the field because he's magic. When he is hurling well, he's outstanding. So, look, hopefully he can get his... The injuries won't hamper him as much this year.
Yeah. All right, let's get into this weekend then, Skell, because Tom Semple's Field on Saturday, 5:30, Tipperary against Limerick. These two served up an absolute cracker in the Munster Championship, you remember, from last year. We had loads of drama in recent times. Second-half comebacks, particularly from Limerick against Tipperary in both league and championship. What kind of game are you expecting this Saturday?
I'm just expecting levels to be raised. Well, generally when the league, the first two rounds is, you know, is kind of, I suppose, managers seeing what they have in terms of their youth. How can they put them into their teams to see, is there noticeable improvement? Is there noticeable, you know, issue if they put them in, are they detraction from the team's performance, etc. After the break, I always look at the league and say, right, time to just turn things up a little bit. It's still the league, don't get me wrong, it's still the league, but I would think managers are turning things up a little bit. The distractions are over now. The Fitzgibbon is finished. You know, there's no issues with college competitions, club competitions. That's all done, and it's behind you now. It's completely inter-county focused. So things trying to ramp up a bit. Not a lot now, but just a bit. So that's why you'd often see teams now, the bigger teams, are trying to get their settled team. If a young person's getting into the team, he then is featuring more prominently, if you like, in place of one of the stalwarts. So I think this week, across all the games, we'll see teams trying to put out a bit of a stronger force. All club players are back, i.e. Ballygunnerby is surely back for Waterford. The Loughrea boys is back for Galway. The Fitzgibbon lads, there's no reason for a break. They're all reintroduced again, and it's a full complement to go for. And that's why you'll see 12, 13, you know, guy starters, I think. You still have one or two, of course, but 12, 13 starters and heading for a humdinger of a game. I expect there to be, you know, sparks in this one. Because Limerick are off to a poor start. They know that. They've been... As I said last week, like the old cement mixer, getting them going is tricky, right? Once they get going, they're very hard. They're very hard to stop.
On a cold morning, cement mixer on a cold morning.
That's what I said. The cement mixer, but once they get going, rough, they're very hard to stop. Like, and so if they play with a strong complement again, you know, this is a game that they'd likely target. I can see them target this game. If they get a win away, because the last away game was poor, and John Colley said himself after the Kilkenny game last week, that the levels, the players themselves knew the levels that they produced against Waterford was well below standard. So now they're probably looking for some level of consistency. A really good performance like Kilkenny. I wouldn't call it clinical.
Yeah.
I've been away more impressed with Kilkenny than I did from Limerick, to be honest. But now we're heading into the home of the Ireland Championships, Ireland champions who are on a decent run, and go for it. So, like, I want to see, there's just two things that you have, right? Aidan O'Connor was in the freeze the last day, I guess, while Aaron Glenn was on the pitch. Is that going to continue? Because that's a big one. Is he going to be, I think he's going to be a prominent member of the Limerick team. Is he going to replace someone who was prominent in the years previous? If Willerton, who features at centre-back again, that's him set. He's done there for the year, that he's not moving. I don't think he'll play three league games in a row and then move him out thereafter. You know, and the same with Lex Tipperary. I'm dying to see the full-back position. You know, is Owen Connolly going back there? Is he going to be occupied by others? Look, Johnny Ryan, is he going to keep his position? Because he was in 24, he lost it in 25. You know, is Michael Breen back, etc. So there's a lot of questions that we're asking that we could get answers over the next, you know, fortnight or 3 weeks that would lead you into the championship. So I'm not, performance is one thing, but it's really about personnel and levels. That said, personnel produce, that's what I'm really looking for.
Mm. Before I bring Murphy now, I do wonder, does Glenn want to be on the free scale? Like, his goal was fabulously taken. It was a goal that was hit with a certain amount of anger and smashed in, though, as well. Like, surely I presume he wants to be involved in hitting the freeze as much as possible, no?
I see, there's margins. Has Glenn ever been the causation of a Limerick loss with poor free taking? Not to my memory.
No.
Correct me if I'm wrong, boys. I can't remember. Like, they've won 5 at Ireland's with him as the free taker, the primary free taker. Every free taker misses one or two. I would say he's guilty the odd time of missing a gimme. You know, we've seen before, he's missed one, you know, let's say one or two in a championship season that he said, geez, he should have scored those. But they've never contributed to him having a major loss. And I wonder, as opposed to taking them off Galan, is he giving them to O'Connor to elevate O'Connor's levels? Sometimes with free takers, when they're on the freeze and they're feeling involved, they produce more from play. And from seeing O'Connor up close, he's electric. He has the ability to be absolutely electric and influence the Limerick team at a very, very high level. So I'm just thinking, was he on the freeze, you know, to get his levels back up to where he'd feel comfortable in the club form? You with me?
Mm.
And maybe is, like, Galan is lethal regardless. You know, maybe, and Galan is there, he's historically their best player in the full forward line, the best free checker, obviously, at the time, and he's lethal from play. So, like, he doesn't need to be, I would say, he just needs to have the arm around him, Will. He just needs to be cuddled. You know what I mean? Whereas maybe Aidan O'Connor just needs a bit of injection of confidence from the management to try and produce his levels, to get them higher. So that's why I say it's more heading for O'Connor to get him up than taking him off Galan.
Yeah, hey, look, O'Connor could prove a better free taker overall by the end of the year. I said I'd ask the question.
Yeah, it's a valid question.
Murph, how do you see this weekend going at Semple?
Well, like, as we said last week, something I felt with Limerick is just that they're building at the moment. Like, their performance against Kilkenny, albeit that they were comfortable winners in the end and probably could have won by more. Yeah, it could have won by more, including the penalty and just even a few other opportunities they had. You know, it just wasn't the slick performance that we've seen from Limerick. And, like, I've been part of those teams as well, where when you're playing the league, it's just not clicking for you for a while, and you just have to keep doing the right things, keep plugging away. And to be honest, you're hoping that towards the end of the league, particularly towards the end of the league, that it does start clicking in whatever capacity, so that when you're coming into championship, you're like, yeah, we're headed in the right direction here, and we can see the improvements. Whereas when you look at Tipperary started really well against Cork. They looked like the better team for the first 10 or 15 minutes. And I thought they were going to kick on. Obviously, when Cork got in front then, you have things like the black card as well. You know, Tipperary being down to 14 men for the 10 minutes or whatever. Like, you know, it obviously affects how the game goes. But I just felt that Tipperary were a little bit more sharper. And I think the thing that Tipperary will take away from the Cork match is that exactly like that, Liam Callaby saying, lads, we started mighty, we were hurting really well, we were popping over scores, we need to keep the foot on the gas. That we started to falter then, we started to play into Cork's hands. When we're hurling our own style and we're tipping away, we're really good, no pun intended, we're really, really good. So I just think that the weekend that's in it, one of the things I've taken into consideration is, where are both teams at? Limerick are playing a really strong team. Like, they're putting out really strong teams, regardless of the few other lads that they're trying out. They're playing really strong teams. But it just looks like that Tipperary have carried over that momentum. So for the early stages of the league, I'm saying that I just think Tipperary are in a good position. I think it'll be a really balanced match nonetheless. Like, Limerick will be looking to go to another level this weekend. Like, they'll be saying, okay, performance against Kilkenny, good. We got the 2 points on the board. We got rid of that Waterford defeat in the first round. Well, now we want another performance, and better again that we're playing in Thurles, because it focuses the mind that small bit more. So I think it's sized up to be a finely balanced game. I think if Limerick get to win this, it'll be an upping of the performance levels that we've seen over the last few weeks. And for me at the moment, if I was to go with what I'm seeing on the field, I just think Tipperary are just in that better position to maybe go and win the match by, you know, 2 or 3 points in a really balanced, finely poised match. That's where I kind of see it at the moment.
Okay. It's a tricky one to call, but that is 5:30 on Saturday. Let's take a look forward to Sunday's games then. So, Skell, I'll let you get the start on Kilkenny against Waterford. Waterford put themselves in a nice position now, 2 wins in a row after that defeat against Cork. Will they fancy going up the road to their neighbours and beating Kilkenny on Sunday?
I think so. It's amazing how quick the landscape can change for a team. You know, if they had to go to Kilkenny after the Cork defeat, the mindset might be far different, Will. But now they're on the back of 2 victories, and regardless of who you beat, you always feel good after a victory. regardless of margins or who you defeat. The fact that you throw in Limerick as being one of those teams that defeated just makes them feel like they're in a good position. And now I think they'll go with this to this game with a feeling of, you know, they'll want to see where they're at now. So they want to see, have they generated a level of consistency that they can bring into the championship? If they go down to Kilkenny and they falter and they produce a bad performance, then the work that they've done in the two games previous, for me, would have been undone. You know, but if they go to Kilkenny, challenge really well at a high level, maybe not win the game, but challenge at a really high level that is consistent with their previous two performances, it's hard to see how Peter Queeley wouldn't be happy. Mm-hmm. That's why I think to look at this with a level of anticipation to see where are we at. And I'm talking about management and players alike, because the Limerick game, the national story after the Limerick game has been, oh, Limerick were poor. Limerick were very bad. You know?
Yeah.
Then you go to the Offaly game, and then people say, it's only Offaly. That's the shit that they'll say, right? So they're not giving Waterford their credit. You have to put teams to sword regardless of who they are. So if they come away from Kilkenny with a victory, Waterford are moving. They're moving. Mm. You know? And it's amazing how we said last year, the landscape is different, how we were concerned about Waterford and the underage not coming through. And we actually touched on it last year, Will, about how they hadn't won. I think we said they've won only X amount of games in Munster in the last. It was
Munster underage record was terrible.
It was abysmal, yeah. And even they had you know, high-profile people over them. That didn't make a huge difference. So we were kind of concerned about the future of Waterford hurling and players going away and injuries, etc. So if we sit here now in a week's time and they've beaten Kilkenny, all that's forgotten about. That's forgotten about. And they have a feel-good factor. Let's be honest, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's sort of good for them. So the two games I'm looking forward to most were Kilkenny and Waterford. And would you believe Dublin and Wexford? Tip and Limerick would be a good game anyways, but I just want to see Dublin and Wexford to see really where Wexford are at and where Dublin are at as Leinster opponents, okay? But Kilkenny and Waterford, Waterford are going to become champion of the bit. For me, Kilkenny-wise, as I said here last week and again this morning, I'm very impressed with the way Kilkenny went about with their business in Limerick. As I said, tough place to go, tough pitch. Heavy clientele around the pitch for Limerick, so it wasn't the case that there was a B team per se. And Kilkenny acquitted themselves really well. A slight overdependence, would you say, on Cody, just at times, but look, he's a player of that level that can produce that performance. Mm. So do it again. Do it again now. And again, those players you touched on, Murph, that are occupying the full-back position, centre-back position, Corcoran, then Timmy Clifford, etc. If they play well again, that goes a step further to answering my question, Mr. Lai. Yeah. Is there people there that can fill a gap or fill into a position and make the Kilkenny stronger?
Yeah.
Regardless of who they replace. So that fixture, I think that'll be a really hotly contested battle.
All right. One of the things, one of the things that jumped into my mind about this Kilkenny Waterford match, like again, there's nothing on the line here, but the performance is on the line, like in terms of both teams be looking for a performance on scale. You just mentioned that it's a case of Waterford are now really looking positive in terms of what they're about and that they're back in the race. And Kilkenny can be heartened by their performance against Limerick. However, like obviously, you're never going to be happy with a defeat. Nevertheless, there was lots of positives to take from it. But there's two lads that, it's been drumming around in my mind over the last couple of weeks, and it's only dawned on me now that the two of them are coming up against each other. And I've just liked how they've approached things. It's like you have Eddie Brennan on the line with Kilkenny, but you have Dan Shanahan on the line with Waterford. The reason I bring it up is because Dan Shanahan in the winter, definitely before the league started, he said something that I just really liked and I found really refreshing, and I'm delighted to see that Waterford are saying it again. One of the things that we would have said about Davy Fitz's tenure with Waterford, the first thing that I noticed was that he downplayed Waterford. And I went, I hated, as a former player, I hated seeing it, because it ticked off something in me where I'm like, if I was part of that panel, I would hate to see someone's downplaying me, the group of players. What are we going out playing for if we can't go and win? And when Davy Fitz stepped away, Desi Hutchinson would then had the free rein to come out and say, I didn't know why he said that and I didn't like it. Couldn't say it at the time, but was now able to say it. Dan Shanahan was in an interview there a couple of weeks ago, and he was asked about it. And he was like, we're going to try and win a Munster championship. And now, regardless how people think that might be unrealistic in whatever corners of Ireland, Ireland fans, I just think it's brilliant that he's coming out and saying that. Like, Waterford are just coming out now going, why would we not aim to try and win a Munster final? Because at the very least, if we're not successful, how about we shock people and get to a Munster final? Or how about we go and we get out of Munster? Why do we aim to be third in Munster? Like, if you aim for be third in Munster, the only success you might have is being third in Munster. Whereas you're not, I don't think if you aim for third, you go and win a Munster championship or you go and get to a Munster final. You don't trip over yourself and suddenly find yourself. But I was delighted to see that the likes of Dan Shanahan is in the dressing room now telling these boys, guys, we're going to try and win a Munster championship. That's what we're aiming to do. And similarly, at the other side, like I thought about Eddie, like I played a Welsh Cup at Eddie, I think 2009, I was brought onto the Welsh Cup panel. And we're playing in Dublin, and Eddie was brought along, and two of us were being brought on at the same time. And like, this was a Kilkenny team 2009. They're after winning the three in a row, going for the four in a row. Eddie had, I don't know how many Ireland medals at that stage, maybe six or seven. And as we went to warm up, his manner went from being very kind of calm and like joking, as you would be going to a Welsh Cup match on the bus, and like hit me a shot in the ribs and was telling me like, this is your opportunity. Like, if you don't take this opportunity, you may not be playing for the rest of the year. And like, you have to take it. This is so important for you, and go out and perform. His emphasis on the performance was so huge that it kind of took me back, because I wasn't used to being around that real steely mentality. And I think Mossy Keown was interviewed during the week, just asked about it. And he was like, Jesus, you know, Eddie Brennan in the dressing room, you know, his mentality and what he asks of players. And for me, that's the thought going into this game. Like, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter who wins or loses this game. It's the performance. And I think the likes of Dan Shanahan on the fire line and Eddie Brennan on this line, two new lads to, let's say, to the setup of Waterford and Kilkenny, in terms of like what they'd be injecting into the team. I just think that is going to be the emphasis this weekend. It's if you're a young lad only stepping onto the team, or you're your own Cody who performed fantastic last weekend, it's still the performance this weekend is the only thing that matters. Nothing after this or not this matters. So I think I'd love to see a just real good battle here, and I think we're going to get it, because I think that's the way both backroom teams are lining up. So for me, on the face of this, it looks like kind of a we'll see how we'll get on game. But I think, and we could be sitting here next Monday and it could be the shittest game we've ever watched. I could be proven wrong. But I just get the feeling that that message that's being given to both panels. And I particularly put emphasis on the two former players there of Dan Shannon and Eddie Brennan. So I'm intrigued to see it. And I'm delighted to see that we're having, you know, a good, you know, a fourth round of the league. And we're looking at Waterford heading in a good direction and Kilkenny blood and players trying to, you know, do something a little bit new. So it looks like it could be a little bit more than meets the eye with this one.
What did Eddie do wrong to end up having to play in the Welsh Cup that day?
No, he didn't do anything wrong. I think in 2009, Eddie Brennan, I don't think he needs to explain himself. No, Brian used to, as every county does, you bring your few players to bolster the team. Like, if you look at any Welsh Cup match, the Munster League matches, or Waterford Crystal as they used to be, like, if you're bringing true players, you have to bring the other players. You can't just bring a panel of 30 lads who are never played senior for your county and don't have anything to look towards. Like, it was always helpful to have your, like I was in the dressing room with him, but like, if you were going to play in a Waterford Crystal match or Munster Championship and you had Seamus Cannon and Bonner Maher in the dressing room while you were togging out other players and getting them a chance to play, those players were able to look at those lads and see, this is a Welsh Cup match, and these lads have All-Irelands, or this is a Munster Championship or a Munster League match, and these lads have All-Irelands, and all that brushes off players. So Eddie Brennan was brought for that reason. Like, as I said to you, we're running up the sideline, going to warm up. Nobody's watching this match. There's probably 400 people at the fecking thing. And Eddie Brennan's hitting me shots in the ribs, telling me this is my opportunity. And if I don't take it, you're not going to get on the team. Like, you need that. And it's probably to bring back to the earlier conversation, Skehel, as you were saying about bringing true younger players. And I was saying, like, the safety net is gone. That's because the realization has to come at some stage that, you know, you're not minor anymore. You might be under 20, but you're not minor anymore. You're not, like, there is no safety net. You want to play senior, you now have to perform. So that's the one thing that I keep thinking about, that when you go back to whatever county you're in and you're saying blood and players. Blood and players is one thing, but it's responsibility of the young players then to take their opportunity. So, Will, while you're asking why did he do wrong, he did nothing wrong. It was just the presence he would have brought to make sure that younger players perform when they're given their chance.
That, but Murphy, doesn't it take a special young player then in the same breath to understand that he only has a certain amount of opportunities to perform?
Absolutely.
So if you're blowing water for now, or Kilkenny, either any county, and you look at your respective championships, like the Munster Championship is starting in the 19th of April.
Yeah.
Waterford playing Clare. That's only 8 weeks from, you know, this weekend's game.
Yeah.
So if you're a young player, you'd say to yourself, right, in terms of matches, I probably have, you know, one match. You know, you probably have, in terms of collective training sessions, I might have, you know, five or six in-house games. I have very limited opportunity to try and unseat, you know, a Daisy Hutchison coming back. You know, I'm using him as an extreme version.
Oh, you're not right. Yeah.
Some young players will be guilty of thinking in their own mind, I have unlimited opportunity. This is going to last for 15 years. And before you know it, 3 years has gone and they've made no impact on the team whatsoever.
Yeah,
so to have someone like Eddie Brennan and Dan Shannon who say, this is now, it's now. Yeah. Liam Cahill did the same thing. You can be sure last November, 12 months, Liam Cahill said, we're going to win the Ireland. Even I had time, nobody in Tipperary would have thought so. But it has to manifest somewhere. It has to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And it starts. And then now that they've won the Ireland, Tip will produce a level this year that's way higher than last year. Guaranteed. Because psychologically, they're at a much higher point.
Yeah.
So a few people in your backroom team, Eddie Brennan's life, that are telling you consistently, we're going to win Leinster, we're going to win Ireland. I think they look past Leinster, to be honest. We're going to win Ireland and keep at it and at it and at it and nearly focus the minds to head for the Ireland. And everything else becomes just a stepping stone.
Mm.
You know, if you can bring young players with you in the same mentality,
yeah,
the group you have, it becomes endless in terms of capability.
Yeah.
But it's hard to get those young players into that mindset.
But that's it, and it's exactly the point. One of the rocks that young players perish on, and it's not to be too dramatic, is that if you make an inter-county team, there's a few players who over the years didn't make their minors and they're under 20s, and they make their senior team. But they're in the rarity. Usually players are making panels and making teams in minor and under 21 or under 20 equivalent by the time you get to senior. But the thing that maybe those players haven't experienced is the experience of being dropped or not being good enough. So the idea that now you arrive to senior, everything has generally worked for you up until this point. And now you get to the stage where now you're in the big pond, like where you have outstanding players around you who might be 27. They're no longer your age. They're 26, 27, 28, 30. Hugely physical players, you know, adept at understanding how to deal with pressure, perform on big days, etc. And you're dead right there, Skell. You could drift through a couple of years there of thinking that it might work this year, but next year it'll work. And suddenly two or three years have dripped by and your standards have plateaued, if not gone backwards a small bit. Yeah. And the big realization for younger players, and if you look at a few players around, we can see players take it. Like Darren McCarthy took it last year. In the early stages, like we look at Darren McCarthy, he performed really well in the league last year. And he was a player. It's easy to say it now because people say young hurler of the year, All-Ireland winner, man in the match in the All-Ireland final. Absolutely. But he took his chances last year. Had to start somewhere. If you look at Ruben Halloran down below in Waterford, he's taking his chances at the moment. He's hurling really well. And I think around the country, you'll be able to see those players who are taking, and some won't. And that's the killing thing. That's the footnote in all this, that some won't. But the quicker that some players realise that every opportunity, these league matches might be to some players, come championship. There mightn't be a championship for you unless you really focus. And that's the emphasis that these young players really have to focus on, is the importance of these matches.
Galway's young players, Skell, are many of them going to get a chance for this game against Offaly now? Because I would think the Micheál, if he's going to get more of a look at the fringe players, this is exactly the game to do so.
I would think, again, if I was in his shoes, I'd be just doing a continuation of same will. There's a group of five players there at the moment that are new, relatively new, we could say. They were on the panel last year, but they didn't get many minutes. So they featured in the first two games this year. You know the ones I'm talking about, Aaron Island, Jason Rabbit, Tara Neary. Killian Traers, those guys. So if we're looking for them to contribute in championship, I just think the more minutes they get, the better. I don't think there's any reason to rest a young player at that age. You know, they're young, vibrant, relatively injury-free, thank God. They've got buckets of energy. Nothing outside life is to turn them from performing. Play them. And if there's more young players that we have to play them. And like, if we risk running a defeat here, so be it. We need to see who we have. I think the way we petered out last year's championship and the championship the year before has been poor. And I think we're looking now to see what we have. And the only way you can see what you have is in the heat of combat. So like Mike Moore said, we have loads of players. And like I would always question some players in Galway. You know, they'd value their skill higher than they'd value their nearly integrity and work ethic, you know, and their mental strength. So sometimes I look at a player and I say he's extremely mentally strong. His skill level might be high. I go with the mentally strong guy. Because as things get tough, and games get tough, and you come up against seasoned players, regardless of league or not, you need to be able to take those hits, you know, proverbial hits, and give them back, etc. So I know we've got loads of skillful players, but there's a couple of guys I'd love to see in. I keep name checking a couple of them. Oisín Nolan, I'd love to see him. He played against Tipperary last year, broke his hand in the league. We didn't see him for the rest of the championship. He's a guy, Micheál Power, another fella. Now, I don't know their injury status, but the more opportunities we give to players like this, the more we can see them, and can they cut the cloth, basically. So that's why I'm looking to these games. Every county has their, you know, they'll have their mantras, they have their targets the weekends, whatever they're trying to achieve. From my perspective, looking at Galway over the last 2 weeks and 3 weeks is, what can we produce? And we've played both Ireland finalists over the last couple of weeks and acquitted ourselves okay, I'd say. Has there been improvement last year? I would say yes, categorically has been yes, because we've played some younger players. Play more of them, see how you can. Now, those younger players, I'm here sitting in front of a laptop. I haven't seen one training session. I haven't seen one performance or ball drill. I have no idea the form of these players. But from looking at them from previous, you're saying, I know this person can do it, you know, so give them the opportunity to do it. But in the same breath, they have to take their opportunity less. There's some of their training over the last month. They've got to show something to the management to say that even warrants you getting a jersey to start. Because whether the lads like it or not, there's no entitlement to a jersey. It's a privilege to wear a jersey. It's a privilege. But you've got to earn it. So the whole place will say, yeah, pay the young lads. But if they're not earning it in the training, so how can they get the jersey? If the same player who's there for the last 7 or 8 years continues to earn it, well, then he then is not warrant replacement. Simple as that. So from a Galway perspective, it's if the young players are semi-performing in training, play them and see what they're capable of.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay. I hope St. Brendan's Park is going to be okay for the weekend. I am worried about every pitch at the moment, really, with the weather's been over the last while. It's just accumulated so rainfall. And
there was huge rain last night around Offaly. I was driving back through it, and it was torrential.
Yeah. Why isn't the game in Tullamore? Sorry to cross you.
It's the idea of playing one game outside every now and then. Right. Playing in the kind of hurling area of the county, or traditional hurling area, I should say, before I get in trouble from anyone else within the county here. So have one in Brendan's Park every now and then. But let's see how the week plays out. I think there's every chance it ends up going to Tullamore, because again the surface is able to just take a lot more damage. Like,
are you the only county to do that? Help me out here.
Monaghan played her football games in a few different venues.
Hurling County, come on.
The odd time Waterford have went between Fraherfield and Walsh Park.
Right, the odd time.
Have Cork ever moved out of Park Queen? Was there another place?
Yeah, they have. Jesus Christ, Parky Rin. I didn't hurl in the new Parky Queen. I used to always hurl in Parky Rin. I've played twice, I'd say, in Parky Queen. The league matches, traditionally, what's burned into my head is you played Valentine's Night against Cork, freezing cold, Saturday Parky night, Rin. Down below in Parky. And because it's a football-based pitch, it was quite sandy pitch. Good pitch. Yeah. And like, we actually always had quite a few really good games there, but you're talking about moving out of it. Jesus, I never got to get into the new Parky Creeve or anything like that. Parky Rin the whole way.
I think Antrim will have used two or three venues already by the end of
Cushion Dahl, Corrigan Park.
And Down will use a few different places as well. Generally, they'll play in Ballycram, but they have played in other venues throughout the league in recent years as well. Mm-hmm. And an obvious one, Dublin. They're in Crow Park this weekend. They play in Parnell Park most of the time. So.
Is that really moving out? Okay. We won't go there, Will. We won't go there.
Argue that all you want.
It's like moving out your house into the Shelburne. It doesn't count.
As far as I know, Offaly don't have any of their injuries back for this week. So I think, again, it's going to be a bit of a struggle. At the same time, though, I think if they put in a reasonably competitive performance like Kilkenny away, happy days. The problem was that Offaly's worst performance of last year was when they got trounced by Galway, even a man up in the championship. And I think the teams that play won't be too dissimilar to the teams that played in the Walsh Cup. And again, Galway had way too much for them in that game, even with the young players there. So I'm not exactly expecting an Offaly win here, but hopefully something more akin to Kilkenny than the Waterford game is all right. But again, let's see. The other games then this weekend, before we finish up, just to give you a complete run through the fixtures. On Saturday, you've got Tip and Limerick, 5:30, Division 1A. Division 1B, the really important one there is Dublin against Wexford. That's at Croke Park at 5 p.m. Kildare versus Clare is at Connaught's Park at 6:30. Clare will be looking to make it 4 wins from 4. Kildare looking to get more of a bounce even after the Antrim game. But I think even the most ardent Kildare supporter would say that's a big ask to beat the Banner. In Division 2, there's a big game at the top of the table. Leash against Kerry, 2:00 on Saturday in Port Leash. In 1A on Sunday, Kilkenny against Waterford, which you mentioned, Nolan Park and Kilkenny, 1:45, and Offaly versus Galway's in Burra, 2 p.m. In Division 1B, it's Antrim against Carlow, which is a must win for Antrim if they're going to stay up. Carlow, I thought, were pretty good for stages against Wexford before the break as well. That game is in Dunloy this week at 1 p.m. just to take another venue for Antrim. And in Division 2 on Sunday afternoon, you've got Westmeath are in London to take them on at 1 p.m. and you've got Meath against Derry, which is in Trim, at 1 p.m. Of course, the construction work's going on in Navan at the moment. So that is the lay of the land. That's what's happened this weekend. We'll be reviewing all of it on the pod next week. Paul Murphy, thanking you, sir.
Thanks very much, lads.
James Gale, we'll talk to you next week.
Have a good day. See you.
The Hurling Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With Apple Green. Making every journey better.